Okay, welcome to Indie Comics Marketing 101 with your host, Chip Mosier, Marketing Sales Director, Boom Studios. To the left, Sam Humphries, the mind behind MySpace Comics, which was the cutting-edge leading digital comics vendor back in the day, who's left a big mark on the industry. And when he left MySpace, he has become a freelance comic book writer, and he has just had great success self-publishing and promoting his own comic book called Our Love is Real, Sam Humphries. In the category of people you should know, Laura Hudson, editor-in-chief, Comics Alliance, a fabulous comic book news website, and one of my favorites, though J.K. is one of my favorites too, but we'll get to him. Laura Hudson, everyone. And the man who needs no introduction, Ben McCool. Ben, you're doing so many things right now. Can you rattle them off? Because I will mess it up.
Memoir. Memoir, which is still coming out, which is doing pretty good for us, which is good. Image series, about a town with no memory. Some bloke randomly remembers everything, etc. You know what? Should we do this later? Because I still need to introduce this gentleman here. Well, you need to introduce him.
Aren't you doing some big two work too?
You're making him do his own introduction. You did it for everyone else.
I know. That's because he's doing so many things.
I've done some stuff. I did a Captain America book landing, which was good fun.
Yeah.
English bloke likes Captain America. I'm as bewildered as you are, believe me. But I did some.
Growing up in the UK certainly prepared you.
I like how they remember.
Pardon?
Growing up in the UK certainly prepared you well for Captain America.
It most definitely did. Yes. That kind of star-spangled way. Absolutely. Lots of that in England.
And then at the end, we have managing editor of Robot 6, J.K. Parkin. He is also in the category of people you should know. So,
yes.
I think that we'll start off with a story. It'll be story time. Actually, you know what? I'm going to back up. Who here is working on their own comic book?
Show of hands. Oh, I like that.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And why the hell are the rest of you guys here? Seriously, yell out. Somebody yell out.
With my boyfriend.
Awesome. Great girlfriend points.
I don't do my own comic books.
Oh, a publisher?
Very cool. Anyone else? This will help us direct the panel. Like, seriously, yell out. Be aggressive.
This gentleman is lost.
It's a great show. I'm sad to see it ended. It's all a dream.
Good roommate.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Okay. Everyone's just here to see you, really.
That's true. It's all a dream.
How could we possibly resist?
So anyway, Sam Humphries, to my left here, had some great success with his self-published Our Love is Real comic book. I have a special thanks in the comic book, which is probably one of the things I'm most proud of in my comic book career, because I love the book with every ounce of my soul. It is wicked awesome. So why don't we start off with Sam, and you can sort of give us a blow-by-blow, and maybe Laura and JK, who I think both did articles on Our Love is Real, can chime in.
We sure did.
And then we'll let Ben McCool talk at some point.
Maybe. So Our Love is Real is kind of a special case study, because it's a sci-fi one-shot, it's black and white, it's done in one, it's 24 pages. I published it, I distributed it, it was available in print and digital. On top of that, it was somewhat of a provocative book taking place in the future about a riot cop who's in love with a dog. And like really, really in love with the dog. So
that's what you're thinking? Yes.
It definitely goes there. And so it was...
That's not even the worst of it.
That's just the starting point. Yeah, we just start there.
It's like page one.
So it was a very special case. And I had to really kind of come up with a strategic plan from the ground up. And I don't think that's necessarily just because it was controversial or it was a weird format or anything like that. I think the number one reason why I did okay with Our Love Is Real is because I threw everybody else's strategy out the window. Or I broke their strategy apart and I picked and chose the bits that worked for me or worked for my goals or worked for my strengths or turned my weaknesses into my strengths. Because you can't... Not everyone can play the Marvel or DC game. If you are David and you play by Goliath's rules, you will lose. So it's really important to get creative, as creative with your marketing and promotional strategy as you get with your writing or your artwork or whatever, anything you do in your book. Did I answer your question?
More.
So yeah, I mean...
You got a lot of buzz on this book. How did that
I had a lot of buzz. You know,
this is Indie Comics Marketing 101. This is the best test case story that's happened in the last year.
I emailed basically anyone who I thought would be interested in covering the book, which meant that I didn't email... I didn't waste my time or anybody else's time emailing websites that were not relevant to my book.
Can I add a point there? Because
yeah.
I was just talking about this with Andy Corey, who's
sure.
you know my associate editor at this point.
Yeah.
But he pointed out and wanted me to pass along that if you are marketing a book, look at the websites that you're
yeah.
thinking about emailing. Look at the content that they cover. Don't email a site that is not going to cover the type of content that you're producing. It wastes both of your time.
Exactly.
Or if you are going to do that for some reason, think about packaging it. Think about what they publish and how your work can fit into that. Don't just carpet bomb, you know, every mm-hmm. website.
You want to make sure that you present a compelling case to any website that you want to cover your comic. I think we said this at the WonderCon panel that somebody publishes a comic book is not in itself a compelling story. Because there are a lot of comic books published out there. And you want to find a hook, you want to find an entry point, you want to find a point of view that makes it compelling for someone to write about your comic or read about your comic. Otherwise, you're just going to get lost in the din, the endless waves of comic books that come out every week.
Because in a certain sense, the editors are making the same decision that the readers are making, or they're
mm-hmm.
trying to, which is, you know, is this going to be interesting enough to look at?
Mm-hmm.
And your concept was very interesting. It could have still been executed very badly, but it was eye-catching, you know, and that gets you in the door.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It gets you looking at it. You happen to know me.
Right.
But even if you hadn't, I think that would have gotten my attention and
yeah.
I would have looked at your book.
And I know you and I know JK and I know a lot of people that I emailed, but I didn't want people to cover my book just as a favor or out of personal obligation because those are the kind of things that you can only take advantage of once. But I spent a lot of time coming up with ways for each site to cover the book in a different way. I know Comics Alliance is very visually driven. They've got an audience that really likes reading pages. They do really well with previews, so I suggested that they run the preview. JK and his site, Robot 6, they do a lot of great point of view articles where they have stuff like, what are you reading this week? And it has special guests talking about what comics they're reading. Or they have a whole series of 6x6, so it could be a list of any six things by anyone in the comic industry. So I suggested I do a 6x6 on, what do? My favorite sci-fi stories.
Yeah, great sci-fi stories.
That's
you
right.
You were very uncommitted to wanting to say that they were your favorite.
I couldn't say favorite. It's too much commitment for me. So you want to spend some time, you want to come up with a list of sites that you think you can get on or think are appropriate for your book, and then you want to come up with a couple ideas for each one. What do these sites do really well with? Because things that you see often on their site are things that they have already determined their audience really responds to.
Another thing I was going to say is, you know, especially if you're just starting out, you're maybe not going to get on the front page of CBR, you know, right away.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, if you're not getting on the biggest sites because you haven't developed that buzz, it's also worth looking at the people who contribute to the site because a lot of them have their own websites, and it's easier to reach them than it is to reach, you know, me or Jonah or JK a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have writers like Chris Sims and David Brothers, and they have their own set of interactions, and a lot of times they bring comics to me and say, I want to write about this. That's much easier to accomplish than sending it to the person at the top all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those secondary sites and those secondary tastemakers are people that you want to figure out who they are and you want to get in touch with them as well.
The thing,
I was going to say, just kind of to follow up on that, and Laura's point about kind of knowing the site and what they do and the kind of things they publish. Like, I know on our blog we have, I don't know, 10, 12 people actually contributing, and none of them have the exact same tastes in comics. If someone sent me something on a sci-fi comic, I send it to one guy. If it was more of an alt comic slice of life thing, I send it to another. So kind of knowing, getting to know those people and knowing who they are and what they like to write about will give you a leg up, because you know, you can eliminate me as the middleman and just go directly to them.
And I think succinctly, you know, Sam had a concept that was fairly controversial and would grab attention immediately. And that was great. He also did, a limited run of 300 copies for sale in 5 retail stores?
Correct.
Eight retail stores. Only 300 copies, which plays on, you know, our hobby as comic book readers and collectible readers. You know, our hobby as readers and also collectors plays on the sexiness of scarcity. And then he also did a day-and-date digital release with Comixology. Mm-hmm. And so Comixology was promoting it. You know, Bleeding Cool promoted it as a hot comic that was going to be a collectible, and I think it was going on eBay the next day for $40. It also, you know, so you were hitting like three different targets. You know, that, you know, a lot of people poo-poo the collecting comics these days in CGC. And there's still a big part of the comic book reading audience that likes that stuff, and you know it. You know, I'm not going to begrudge someone, you know, that aspect of the hobby. And so you had something for everyone. And it was a great product. It's, you know, it was like reading a Twilight Zone episode, you know, sort of mixed in with Susie Bright, if anyone knows who that is. But
essentially what Sam did, he established his target audience.
Yeah.
And he did a wonderful job in doing it. I mean, that's marketing, you know, 101 in itself. It's establishing the target audience, finding one that's going to be interested in the product, and then obviously making it as readily available as possible. Well, you were really smart, you clever bastard, you.
Right, thank you.
releasing this like limited run, which generated a lot of buzz in itself. You had a lot of, like, you know, very well-established creators on Twitter, such as Jason Allen, for instance, mm-hmm. saying that this book is wonderful, you should totally go and check it out, which made the limited run very, very desirable. But at the same time, it was available to everyone via Comixology.
Yeah,
so
Comixology,
check it out,
mail order.
But at the same time, the hardcore dedicated could absolutely try and find something unique and special.
And that's, you know, that's just a function of, I'm just one guy with this, like, pervy sci-fi comic. I'm not a publisher. Like, if my demand is 20,000 copies, there's no way I can publish and move 20,000 copies by myself. If you are like, well, I'm going to beat Marvel at their own game, that's definitely a weakness. But if you're like, I'm going to come up with my own game, suddenly that becomes a huge strength for you.
And the three things that I always say, sort of the base level, base points, you know, when you're doing any sort of marketing, other than figuring out your target market, is, I have this written down so I don't forget, because I forgot one panel. It was really embarrassing, but I was sick. Is, you know, you need to be aggressive. And Sam was really aggressive in getting the word out. You know,
but not douchey.
But not douchey, yes.
That's
the
important
thing.
There's a fine line. Sometimes I've crossed that line. Maybe I've crossed that line.
You've crossed that line.
Yeah, I have lived before. I've had to apologize a couple times. It's sad. And then two, you know, you need to be shameless, you know. But again, there's a fine line there. You can't really, you know, you can't really be too concerned what people are thinking about you, which, you know, you're doing a comic book about dog beeping and, you know, another thing.
Loving.
And what?
Loving. Dog loving.
Loving. Dog
it's
loving.
A love story.
Thank you.
You don't even think of that word. I love that.
Don't debase it.
I should debase it. It's a beautiful thing.
The better the product, the more you can get away with as well. You know, you can justify, you know, sorry to interrupt, I said real quick, you can justify outlandishness if the quality is there and the, you know, obvious skill is in place. So.
And a lot of people, I feel like they hold back on reaching out and stuff because they're too worried about being cool. And I think that there was a big risk in sending a book about dog loving out and people going, man, Sam Humphries is a whack job. You know,
not as big a risk as sending it to my own mother. That was hard.
But I mean, like, this is the game that you're playing. You want people to read your comic, and they're going to say things about you on the internet. And you have to be ready for that, you know? And being afraid up front when you should be pushing your work out, that's not the time to be afraid. Because it's not going to get easier if you succeed, you know?
So just to say something actually about the book, because if you haven't read it, you're probably thinking, oh my God, what are these people talking about? Am I going to get into something like this? Because I know you sent it to Tim O'Shea, who writes for our site beforehand. He did a little review of it. And I remember he said, it's about such and such, but don't be scared of the concept because it's not really like an explicit book.
It's incredibly tasteful.
It's not explicit at all.
It's if you've ever read like Transmetropolitan or something like that, some of Warren Ellis' stuff, it's more along those lines than something that, you know, you're hiding under the mattress or something like somebody sees it.
Delicate subject matter handled delicately.
So we're going to take a little moment here. How many people have Twitter on their phones? How many people? So right now, I want everyone to tweet how great the Indie Comics Marketing Panel is.
See, he's actually he's enacting what he's telling you to do right now. He's being pushy.
Yes.
He's pushing out this marketing. This is what he's doing right now.
I'm pushing the line into douchebaggery. So,
you're leading by example. It's important.
So in any case, the switching gears here, so you don't think that they dropped off the colon dog loving off the end of this panel thing. You know, Ben, the last time we were on the panel together, you know, you and Ben Templesmith had just done a hellacious tour of comic shops. And I don't think there's any question, and I fully expect because of Our Love is Real that Sam will be, getting a hell of a bunch of writing jobs coming up out of that.
Hey, Sam, is there going to be a sequel?
Oh, that is the question of the convention. There are many more stories I'd like to tell. I'm in no position to publish a 60-issue ongoing series, so we'll see if there's a publishing solution out there that can make it work.
And
I'm not saying no.
There's many more stories I'd love to read.
So if someone backed up a dump truck of money to your house, you wouldn't tell it to turn around and go in the other direction?
No, it wouldn't even. Maybe even just a golf cart of money, not even the dump truck. Just a little bit, just enough to make the business plan work. That's all I need.
And one thing I really like about what Sam did is instead of waiting for a publisher to give him the green light on his dreams, he did it all himself. So for the creators out there that are pitching stuff and getting frustrated by publishers saying no. And, you know, Sam showed Boom the book, and everyone at Boom loved the book. We have not had a lot of great financial success with one-shots, and so it was something that we passed on. But I knew, you know, Sam had told me his plan, and I was like, man, I think it's a better plan than us publishing. You know, you'll get a lot more out of it. And I think you have. I think it's a great thing. But moving on to Mr. McCool, can you talk about the tour? Because I think there's a direct correlation to the amount of work that you and Ben did on that book and that tour, and that a year later, you know, you have a bunch of big two, you know, work underneath your belt.
Sure. I mean, in a nutshell, what happened was that I met a certain Mr. Ben Templesmith here at Comic-Con a few years ago. I was a guy looking to break into comics, a medium I loved to Vince, and one I always wanted to work in. And Ben, being the ever so generous bloke, decided to check out something that I wrote. He seemed pleased with my blabbering at a party, and he thought to himself, well, this guy can write vaguely like he talks. I'd be interested in doing something with him, so I sent it to him. It ended up being Choker, he loved it, and we decided to do it as a book with Image. The somewhat oddball situation was that he's like this big industry superstar who's had like a blockbuster movie made based upon one of his works, and I was like a regular guy with a funny accent. So we decided to really push the boat out, do something different, do something dynamic, and really try and get the product out there. And so we came up with this idea of visiting a bunch of comic book stores around the country, like from Seattle to New York to Florida to Arizona to California, just all over the gap.
And what were the things that you guys did on each stop of the tour that related thematically to the vibe and the story of the book?
Well, the book is, I mean, in case you guys haven't checked it out, Choker's like hard-boiled noir with a cyberpunk twist. Pretty much what might have happened if Raymond Chandler went out on a 10-day bender with William Gibson. It's kind of crazy. And we wanted that kind of feel to be present amongst the signs we did. So, like, you know, me and Ben were like, you know, just like hanging out with customers before and after the signing, kind of like drinking with them, taking them to bars, doing all sorts of outlandish stuff. In fact, during a signing we did at Atomic Comics in Phoenix, Arizona, me and Ben were getting tattooed while kind of signing people's books.
That is commitment.
That's pretty hardcore.
So where's the tattoo?
It's on my leg. If Ben drew it on with a Sharpie, we got some random bloke who happened to work around the corner to like tattoo it onto my leg. It looks dreadful, but kind of awesome at the same time. But it was just something we thought would be a hell of a lot of fun. I, you know, clearly don't take too much pride in my physical appearance, so I figured, fucking, oops, I've got a few shots to get away with it. But I thought, sod it, let's just do something fun and crazy. And so at the back of issue 3 of Choker, we actually had photographs of me and Ben both getting tattooed while signing customers' comics, and they absolutely loved it. At the back of the comic book, we had like my personal email address, and I said, listen, guys, if you like what we're doing, feel free to hit me up, send me fun ideas and fan mail or a fan art or whatever the hell you want to do, and we put as much of it into the back of the book as we possibly could. It was just doing something fun, eccentric, pioneering, something that people could get involved with, and it worked wonderfully well.
I mean, I think the fact that, I mean, you ended up doing a book with Ben Temple Smith, which most people don't get to do, but, you know, you did it because, you know, to a large degree, you had developed, you know, relationships, and you developed, you know, networking and developing those contacts in the comic book world. Like, you can't just walk up to people and ask them to do these things.
No, without doubt. I mean, I got absolutely as lucky as all hell, but bear in mind, I've been going to conventions for many, many years, just kind of like hanging out in bars, trying to meet somebody important, you know, just essentially trying to, you know, network and meet cool people. And, you know, if you stick at it long enough and you're not too annoying and you're willing to buy people drinks, you know, eventually someone's going to take notice. It's a case of putting yourself out there. So like I say, I got extremely lucky, but to quote an old cliche, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Luck is where hard work meets opportunity.
I completely agree.
You're just a fortune cookie today.
Yeah, I know. That's my favorite saying. You know, and one of the things, you know, coming from a, you know, from someone who works at a publisher, you know, when you're looking at people to pick to write stuff, and, you know, there's a value add, like with Sam or with Ben, and you know they're going to be out there pushing their stuff as much as possible, I mean, that certainly makes a difference in people's calculations. So for all the, you know, creators out there, stuff that are thinking about career advice, you know, that's something to consider. Should we?
You just got to work your ass off. If you work a lot and you work hard and you have comics to show for it and not just a lot of ideas you talk about all the time, people will take notice of your work. It's the easiest and best way to get notice. Maybe second behind buying people drinks.
You know what? That kind of helps too. But in a rare moment of seriousness, there's never been an easier time to get products out there. You can, you know, like stick up a webcomic that it's immediately accessible to everybody. You know, you can go to a con, meet somebody that might think you're kind of cool, give them your card with a link to your, you know, whether it's your blog or whatever the hell it is. And they can check out your stuff instantaneously. And if it's good, it might lead to work. It's all about, you know, generating opportunity. And that's, you know, the case of hard work, good product, and, you know, drink buying abilities. They all come into play. But, yeah, like I say, you can get your work out there very inexpensively. You know, in some cases for free. I mean, I'd be curious to hear how much it costs to print 300 copies of... too much personal detail.
No, I don't mind revealing it all. It's I don't remember the final tally, but it was $1.47 per issue. It cost me $1.47 per issue. I did have one huge advantage in that it was a black and white book. Color is quite more expensive, but it was 8x8. It was a square format, 24 pages, and a color cardstock cover for $1.47. That's not a bad deal. And even if you can't afford to pay for 300 copies, you can probably afford to pay for 50 or 10 and hand them to editors or your peers at conventions, and then you have, like, you have, that's a real comic book.
And I think that's something I've heard from a lot of people, especially people who want to write. Because if you're an artist, you can put up your art, people will look at it. But if you want to be a writer, you can't just walk up to a publisher and be like, I am a really good writer. You know, and even if you've written a script or something like that, if you can't show them a product, you're going to have a much harder uphill climb than if you have something like what Sam has, an actual finished comic book that you can hand to them to show that you can execute.
Exactly. If you have an artist and a letterer and they execute your script, it's so much more fun to read than to sit down with a 20-page Word document and try real hard to imagine how cool it might be. And when it comes to printing, it's not as hard as you might think, even if you've never done anything like that before. I just used a local printing place in where I live in Los Angeles. They usually do brochures and business cards and stuff, but I told them what I wanted. I gave them some examples, and they figured it out, and they did a bang-up job with it.
So, Sam, could you have easily just put this out digitally?
That's correct.
Digital, right? Mm-hmm. And skip the printing altogether. Did you ever consider that, and do you think it would have resonated as well if you had?
You know, in hindsight, I don't think it would have resonated as well because it would have lacked that extra element to the story of having a limited edition and being in a select number of retailers. Also,
we're on the third printing.
We're on the third printing now. The third printing is a con exclusive here at the show at the Geekscape booth every day from 11 to noon.
And it has a variant cover?
Has a variant cover, exclusive to San Diego Comic-Con.
And what's that cover called?
It's called the Mineral Sexual Edition, and that was named by Mr. Chip Mosher.
I can't either.
Look at you guys marketing over there.
No, it's marketing up a storm. I learned from the best. To answer your question, when I was pulling together my strategy, my goal was to reach as many people as possible. And some people just like to read physical paper comics. I am one of them. I love reading digital. I'm a firm believer in digital. But there's something awesome about just having a paper version of the comic.
And I also think there's the scarcity thing, the collectability, right, the fact that it was on eBay for $40. It made people want to know what the hell this thing is that people are willing to pay $40 for it the next day it came out with. And I think a lot of people, in the comic press these days, are mostly people who read comics for enjoyment, and I think that's great. And there's a lot of people because of the early '90s, they just hate variant covers, just hate collectability, they hate that aspect of the comic book reading populace. And I think it's an underserved market. I think, comics can be read for enjoyment. You can also collect them. They have numbers on them. You can collect them all. I think that's a cool aspect, and it's sort of underserved right now. And I think you utilize that. There's a couple of forums like about the CGC stuff that I've gone to, and it's wicked what people are doing in those marketplaces. And, no one's writing about that. I haven't read anything on the mainstream comic book press. But there's a wicked CGC, marketplace, the collectibility thing. It's also...
Don't be afraid to produce a limited edition. Limited editions are cool. Especially if you have a great product and it looks great. Physical printed objects are cool. They're fun to have and fun to collect.
You can only love your iPhone or iPad so much.
That's true. Plenty of respectable publishers, even outside comics, do limited edition. Toshin, Vanity Fair.
TV Guide. People.
Well, I was going to say, because you had the limited run. I mean, there's really not that much of a difference between the limited run and having, a variant edition of something in terms of trying to generate buzz by having a product that's more exclusive. You're doing the same thing.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that no one in this room can print on the scale of DC, but you don't need to do that to get buzz on the scale of DC. You just turn your weaknesses into strengths.
Mark Zuckerberg is back. He can print.
Oh, but we're going to talk later, dude.
So anyway, I would like to, every time we do this panel, there's, one time we did this, and there were like tons of people that wanted to publish their own stuff, tons of people who are, creators. It seems like there's a real diverse crowd here, so I'd like to open it up for questions. And you guys, it's a great opportunity to ask Sam about the stuff he's did, ask me about, any boom stuff that you've seen us do. Ask Laura, Comics Alliance, see what she's interested in doing and, or interested in receiving, and J.K. Parkin, and let's get this guy with his hand raised here.
How did you get your limited edition into the 8 comic shops? So that's kind of difficult to get in the comic shops.
He asked, how did I get my limited edition to 8 comic book stores? And the answer is I just called them up. I called them up, I emailed them. Some of them I had previous relationships with, but mostly I targeted retailers who were pretty proactive in their marketing. They were pretty adventurous. They seemed to have an affinity for indie books. They seemed to make an effort online or otherwise promote indie books that they carry. So again, it's like picking your targets. You don't want to...
Yeah, same thing with the websites.
Yeah, exactly.
Which 8 stores?
We had Meltdown and Secret Headquarters in Los Angeles. Oh, and Brave New World just outside of Los Angeles. Isotope in San Francisco. Floating World in Portland, Oregon. Beguiling in Toronto. And Desert Island in New York City.
Mm. Yeah,
that's it. Oh, and then Collector's Paradise... they have 2 branches within Los Angeles.
One of the, you know, before I became the marketing and sales director of Boom, I made an abortive attempt to write comics, and I wrote a book for Boom, and that's how I got involved with them, called Left on Mission, which people still say they liked, which is nice. But one of the things I did is I called 75 stores in 48 hours and made it a little bit of an event, took pictures of myself calling all the stores and made little animated GIFs and stuff. But, you know, as long as you're not calling retailers on the day the books come in.
Yeah, don't call on Tuesday or Wednesday.
You know, retailers love, you know, 95% of the retailers that I talked to in that two-day period, they were really excited to hear from me.
They did. It's kind of tall fucker. They'd love to be involved, and they absolutely deserve to be involved, mm-hmm. because, you know, they really are the centerpiece of the industry. You know, and so when they see a creator making a conscious effort to, like, involve them and think about them and think that what could possibly benefit them.
And work really them into the marketing them. And the promotion and the story of the book.
Well, that's like, I mean, I do that to this day now, especially with, you know, if you're doing a book through, like, you know, Boom or Image or essentially not DC or Marvel, you know, speaking to them on a more personal level, you know, actually taking the time to contact them, you know, perhaps meet up at a con, whatever, they so appreciate that. And retailers talk to other retailers, so that word has spread like wildfire. I couldn't possibly, you know, emphasize how important it is to, like, understand how important retailers are in the industry and how much you should just, you know, talk to them.
And Sam, how hard was it to get your book on Comixology?
It was really easy. I don't know if they want me to say that.
Yeah. I mean, someone hooked you up with them. I don't know who that might be.
The eternal champion of Our Love is Real, Chip Mosher, helped me out with Comixology.
But, I mean, those guys are pretty, you know, I talk to those guys a lot. They're pretty darn approachable. You know, and they're comic book fans, you know, so...
Is there a pitching process involved in getting your work on Comixology? Like, do you have to send them... I'm actually quite curious.
You know, I sent them a PDF.
Like, assuming it hasn't been published elsewhere first, I mean?
Right, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I had a PDF of the entire book, including the front cover, inside front cover, back cover, everything. Because you want them... Similar to what we were saying earlier about why it's handy to have, if you're a writer, have your book drawn... Retailers and digital distributors, they want to see what the book is going to be like. They don't want to hear you talk it up for 20 minutes. They want to be able to look at the art. They want to be able to read the story. They want to see all the work you've put into it and understand that this is an attractive product that they can sell.
Gosh, the next panel is going to be really cool. Okay, so I told people to be aggressive, so the most aggressive hand raiser is going to get next. That guy.
The question was essentially, after I got the books into retail stores, how did I make sure customers bought the books instead of their usual Marvel or DC or Boom books? I mean, that I really have to give credit to people like Laura and JK, who have audience of people who go into stores and read stuff. And, you know, most readers, I mean, you are all readers, I assume. Most readers want to know about cool new books. But it's difficult to really go through all these books yourself and really understand. So you have to go to people who can filter these books for the readers, and that's people like Laura and JK and any other blog out there that people read.
Okay. in the red shirt.
No, social media absolutely played a part in it, for sure. That's something we haven't touched on at all,
yeah,
no, which is very important. The greatest thing about social media is it's free. It's such an effective tool, and the second greatest thing about it is it's as effective as the amount of work you put into it, or as the amount of strategic thought you put into it.
And I think Stephen Sanders, right? Or
yes.
Saunders?
Stephen Sanders, the artist of Our Love Is Real.
Stephen Sanders, the artist, found the book the next day on eBay for and it had gone for $40, and he tweeted that, and then other news sites picked that up, mm-hmm. and then it was retweeted.
Which is great too, because one thing we talked about on a previous panel was, you know, you have issue one of whatever come out, mm-hmm. and then how do you get attention on your book for issue two or moving forward into the future? Being able to create a second news cycle based on how much buzz you created for yourself is a real win. Mm-hmm. So that was fantastic. So yeah, promoting yourself in that way when you have that level of success, and being able to create that second level of story for other people to spread across social media.
Yeah, it was a great story that had multiple storylines throughout like a 4 or 5 day period, and there's only, I think you guys probably, I don't think you guys are averse to Marvel and DC coverage. You do a lot of that. I think at the end of the day, you're always looking for the next cool big new story, and presenting the Our Love Is Real story on a platter. The same thing as when you did the tour, Ben, is, that was, I think the last time I remember I know Dave Sim did some tours in the mid-90s, but, Matt Wagner, when he premiered Mage, I think on, when Mage number 5 was released, he got in his van and did the Mage North American tour.
It's funny, Dave Sim was absolutely an influence in that regard, because I'd heard these stories of him, like, back in the day, 77 was it, Silver started, 76? And so obviously then there was no internet. He literally called every single store himself. He was like, okay, then I want these guys to know about my book. I want to pimp my book on a first-hand basis. This is how I'm going to do it. Before long, Cerebus was, pulling in kind of DC Marvel-esque numbers. I mean, the interest was absolutely astonishing. It was a case of him promoting it properly, promoting it enthusiastically, and the product being really bloody good.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about some of his more recent views, but he was he was an indie comics marketing pioneer, though, and you can never take that away from him.
Yeah, it's Julie Mendes.
We've got 15 minutes left, so, yes. Entertainment marketing or comic book marketing? I think they're two separate things. You like comics? Are you interested in marketing comics, or are you interested in marketing other things? Well, I've missed 5 San Diegos in the last 22 years. When I was 16 years old, I sold my parents on the idea that I could come out here with 10 of my friends and share a hotel room for a week and it'd be okay. I think that was the first successful sales job I ever played on someone. And that was a really bad idea. Because I did things that 16-year-olds weren't supposed to do, like drink. But we'll move on from that. Anyway, I've missed 5 San Diegos in 22 years. I'm a lifelong comic book fan. I basically got a job in a comic book store when I was 14 because I took some back issues. Todd McFarlane back issue stock, some Spider-Man that they had for $1. And the price guide just came out, and it had raised to $15. And I was hanging out at the store all day, and I took the 10 copies, and I was like, why don't we price this up to $15 each issue, put it by the register. And the store owner, Cecilia, said, okay. And in 3 hours, they were all gone. And she was like, do you want a job? And I'm like, yes. And so, it's just something that the sales stuff I've always been interested in. I've sold computers, I've sold motion capture, I've done a lot of crazy crap in my career, but I've always been a comic book fan, and I've always been a big champion of people's work, and reading something, getting passionate about something like Sam's book, just comes naturally, and coming up with crazy promotion ideas, and figuring out who's actually buying stuff, and doing that hard work, and So, you know, I think, I don't know if I have any specific advice on a marketing career, other than just, you know, whatever you're super passionate about, follow that. Because I've certainly done things in my life that I haven't been super passionate about, and I look back, in my younger years, and I'm like, wow, I wasted years of my life doing that. So, you know, try to, you know, figure out what you're passionate about and go for it. Go for it 110%.
I also think it's worth noting that comics is not a lucrative business. Comics marketing is not so lucrative. If you don't love it, there are other things you can do where you'll probably make more money. I think most of the people I know who are in comics are in it because they're passionate about it, and that's the right reason to do it.
Passion breeds enthusiasm, enthusiasm breeds success. So, you know, if it's something you're really, really into, absolutely go for it.
Sir?
Along those lines of not making a lot of money in it, what did you do, Sam, while you're developing your idea for Our Love Is Real? What did you do for a human and to pay the bills?
He's asking me how I paid the bills. It certainly wasn't with my perverted sci-fi comic.
I put it on eBay for $40.
That's right.
That's how
it's all. That's how it works.
You ever seen The Sting? Robert Redford.
You're dating yourself.
I know. It's on Netflix. Anyone can watch it. Come on. As you said, I used to work at MySpace. I have a long career in new media, so I consult for companies in terms of new media, social media, all that kind of stuff. That's basically how I support myself. Right there.
Yeah. So also to continue on that path, if you have a product that you're ready to distribute, but that's where the point that you're at, is it worth hiring maybe other services to help you market, or is that not a good idea if you're starting out?
Probably not the greatest idea, just because it's going to cost you more money.
You can spend that money printing comic books to bring to conventions and showing people.
Or printing buttons or posters or things to help retailers sell your work. I mean, if you take a long, honest look at yourself and you're like, there's absolutely no way I can be an effective marketer for whatever reason, then I guess maybe you should consider it. But I think, you know, no one is going to care more about your comic than you are. Absolutely, there's no one in this world who's going to care more about your book than you do. So you are going to set the bar. If you set it low, then people are going to care somewhere down here. But if you care way up, all the way up here, then people care up in this range. So people will follow your example. And I think if you, you know, I mean, it's not an easy job. I'm not saying anyone is born doing it, but there's a lot of examples out there. You know, there are what you can read up on the internet. You can look up at other success stories, talk to your peers, see what they do. I think if you honestly have trouble marketing your own book, then maybe you should try doing another book. If you don't feel that passionate about your book, then maybe it's not the best book to put forward.
Is it your book?
Yeah.
It is?
Some people just really aren't good at marketing, though.
Is it?
Some people really
aren't. I'm sorry.
If you're not
I mean, you're really good at it, was what you did.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not good at marketing, you know, you know, people complain about not being able to break the signal-to-noise ratio at Comic-Con and stuff, and, you know, and they write about it on their blogs at Comic-Con, and I'm like, yeah, I saw you at your booth. You had your sunglasses on, and your arms crossed like this, and, you know, of course you didn't sell any of your comic.
And I'll just say from my perspective, I know Laura's like to get a million press releases, especially this week. During Comic-Con, just
oh my goodness.
Tons of stuff, and they're all from these marketing companies, and you look at them all, and it's like Blast Media and all this other stuff, and it's like most of those I just delete, and I see one from a guy who's like, hey man, I'm at booth number whatever, I'm selling my comic, this is what it's about, and it's sort of like when Sam reached out to me about this book, you know, he didn't blast like everybody at the same time. He said, hey JK, how's it going? I got a book about but it was actually personalized. And I think going back to Ben's example of the tour, it's actually getting out there and meeting people. So a lot of it's not just really about the book, it's also about you. It's also like, you know, what makes you an interesting person and what made you want to be a creator and all that kind of stuff. I mean, like when I do interviews for the site, a lot of it is about, you know, what were your influences? What comics did you read? You know, what made you want to do this? all that sort of stuff. So a lot of the story is yourself. So if you turn to somebody else to kind of tell that story, it's going to be a lot tougher. You're going to lose a little bit of it.
I mean, the one thing that I would say is that if you are going to hire somebody to do some of that marketing for you, you need to make sure it's the right person. Because like JK says, you're getting so many emails. There are people, for example, who have worked for publishers that have gone on to do freelance. I'm more likely to look at those emails, you know, assuming that they're doing their job and they're doing it correctly. But you would need to know who that right person is to have that person that can have those connections. And I think if you're at the point where you're someone who needs someone else to do that type of outreach for you, it might be hard to figure out who those people would be. They exist, you know, and I could see some advantage to it, but I could also see there being a lot of people who would take your money and not necessarily give you those advantages.
Well, never underestimate the potential in web presence. Like, if you feel uncomfortable approaching people at shows, if you don't, consider yourself a salesman, an artist, or whatever the hell, you can, like I say, put together a web comic, try and generate some buzz about it, and people will read it. If you know how to use Twitter, Facebook, what's that thing I've got an invite for? Google Plus, is it? All that kind of stuff. Just
Tumblr.
Tumblr. I don't even know what Tumblr is. Oh. But anyway, so I'm probably the wrong person to be talking about this. But like, in all seriousness, if you put your thing out there on the web and it's good and people check it out, like you were saying earlier on about the tweets and retweets and various news sources picking up on it, you can absolutely try and establish an identity that way. You can show what you're capable of doing. So when conventions come along, there's not so much pressure on you to perform on a personal level, because at the end of the day, the work will speak for itself.
Yeah, and right now, every Tuesday, there's a bunch of retailers and creators and people that get together on Twitter under the hashtag Comic Market and talk about these types of issues. So it's something that you want to, lurk on Tuesdays. It sort of leads in the rest of the week. There's a lot of interesting, things being thrown around. So
let me make another suggestion. Get to know your peers, network with your peers. If you have a friend who does really good job with marketing, maybe work out a trade with him. Be like, if you help me market my comic, I will do coloring work for you, or lettering work for you, or draw, or something like that.
Or buy a first print of Our Love Is Real off eBay for $400 and give it to you as a gift.
The fix is in.
Yeah. Okay, I think we are nearing the end. One last question. Whoever stands up first to ask a question gets it. Woman in the back. Louder.
You mentioned the hashtag Comic Market. I was wondering if there's any other good informative websites or books or anything, Twitter feeds.
Comics Tribe.
Right now, go check out after this panel program. Awesome.
Comics Tribe. It's COMIXTRIBE. They have a lot of, and they have a lot more than just marketing stuff. They're also sort of about the creative process as well. A lot of articles from a lot of different creators, retailers, stuff like that.
I believe C.B. Sobolski's Twitter feed was compiled into a blog somewhere as well. He's like breaking into comics.
Yeah, he's a good one to follow.
Like, if you follow C.B. Sobolski, works for Marvel, very nice blog. His Twitter feed is like absolutely quintessential following if you're looking to break into comics. But I believe it was compiled somewhere on a blog. If you do a Google search, I'm sure you'll find it.
I think it's on Marvel.com.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Bless you.
Marvel get a plug after all. But, but yeah, absolutely, worth checking out. Invaluable advice. He's been there. He's seen it. He's done it. He knows what he's talking about. So,
Is Matt Nasto still here? Matt, are you still here? Matt Nasto, did you leave? He left.
Take another question.
What?
Take another question.
Yeah, I will. But Matt Nastos has a blog where he writes about comic marketing, and he has some opinions I don't necessarily agree with all the time, but look him up. He's got a very interesting perspective, and comes from a very hardcore business background. So I was wrong. I thought we only had time for one more question, but she says we have 5 minutes, so who jumps up first?
Okay, for the creators, since most print comics have such limited print runs now, do you find yourselves marketing your work digitally different? Like, Arlo is still going day and date digital. Was there any difference to your marketing strategy as far as the digital aspect of your work versus print?
Good question.
I think definitely on a fundamental level, if you have a digital aspect to your release plan, it changes so much for you. It's all of a sudden a much different story. It's a much different strategy. I think when it comes to a limited print run, the first issue of Our Love Is Real sold out in 9 hours. and I was not prepared, so I did not have a second edition ready. So there was all this buzz.
Rookie move.
I was having lunch with Chip that day, and I was getting text messages from all the retailers, and they were like, can I get 50 more? Can I get 20 more? Can I get more of this? And I had zero left. I had absolutely none left. I had five for me and one.
Underestimated your potential.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think it was, it really came into play when I could say, like, this is sold out, but there were still people who really were curious, want to check it out, see what the buzz is all about. And I could say, this book is always in stock on Comixology. This will never go out of stock. And Comixology, or any digital distribution platform, or even your own sort of homebrew digital distribution, it's so easy to spread with social media because it's just one link. Nobody has to get off their ass, get off the internet, and leave the house and go to a store, or call a store, or find a store, or anything like that. They can just click, send you some bucks, and then it's a done deal.
But you can't get the mineral sexual variant.
That's right.
You can only get it here.
You can.
Well, that goes back to the whole.
For $4, and it's at what booth?
Geekscape booth, number 4016.
Thank you.
But that goes back to the whole identifying the target audience. Bear in mind, you know, more traditionalists, maybe kind of like old school comic collectors, would like, you know, physical matter in the hand. You know, much like myself, I prefer a comic book to hold and read. Whereas on a digital platform, it's instantaneously available to everybody. So people who are more tech savvy, for instance, may be more inclined to check something out on their iPad, or people who don't live anywhere near a comic book store. You know, so you need to kind of go for those people. And, you know, so they're like the subtle differences, but as I say, you know, they're subtle enough to take note.
Thanks.
There we go.
Do we have time for one more question, Eunice Lopez?
One more question.
First person that jumps off.
Oh,
come on.
Just let them raise their hands.
No more questions? Okay, you, sir.
Yes. For Ben, I was wondering if Image kind of kicked you up the ass to go and do that tour, or if you decided to do it on your own volition. And if you did they actually help you, like, finance it, or did you just decide it's going to boost my royalty fee and that'll pay for it?
Ben, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, the question was, did Image assist us in organising the church at all? The simple answer is no. That's no slight of Image. It was completely our own idea. What we did do, however, was contact the retailers directly, express an interest in doing this grand outlandish expedition. They were very receptive to it, and as a result, were willing to help us out finance with, like, flights and accommodation and things like that. Again, that was made entirely possible by contacting the retailers directly. You know, they really liked the fact that we were so enthusiastic about it, and, you know, it kind of benefited them in the sense that they ordered more copies because, you know, Mr. Templesmith was going to be there, so, you know, fingers crossed he all made a bit of money out of it. But, you know, various news sites picked up on the fact that we were doing this, etc., etc. So Image will certainly push your book to a degree, but as a vendor, being creative own, it's in your own hands to do whatever you can to get that thing noticed.
I was going to say, you know, like, if you're not at Marvel, you're not at DC. Mm-hmm. Just getting your book to a smaller publisher doesn't always mean that you get to stop, you know, trying to market your book and yourself.
Well, look at guys like Jonathan Hickman, one of the hot properties of Marvel, writing the best Fantastic Four in decades, I think, but he's doing work at Image, and he's pushing that as hard on Twitter as can be. You know, he understands that he still needs to generate awareness for his creative own work, despite the fact that it's his, you know, big deal at Marvel.
Yeah, look at what Jonathan Hickman has done, because he is extremely smart in the way that he markets his books, particularly his indie books.
And such a nice gentleman.
He has such a lovely southern accent, too. Nice. It's really easy to transcribe.
As opposed to his accent.
So, hey, Jonathan. Follow him on Twitter. He tells you how to market your books properly.
So, I think this is, what, the fourth year?
Fourth year we've done this.
And so I want to thank everybody for coming out.
Thank you, guys.
You know, there's a lot of people that say Comic-Con's not about comics. Thank you so much for showing up. Thanks for your passion.
Cheers.
Thank you. Have a great show.